When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
And it is caught! Touchdown!
You're listening to the best of the Eagles.
And the Eagles win! The Eagles win!
A weekly mix of Sports Radio 94 WIP's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
They're 6-2. It's a four-game winning streak. And, of course, Nick Sirianni joins us every single Tuesday at this time. He's brought to us by Bud Light. Pre-game with Ava Graham this Sunday before the Birds play Dallas at the Irish Horn in Richboro. Now, the Eagles will play in Dallas, but you can be at the Irish Horn in Richboro. Win tickets to the next Eagles home game and, of course, win merchandise. And we welcome the 6-2 head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, Nick Sirianni. Good morning, Nick.
Morning, guys. I'm not going to FaceTime you, though.
That would be cool.
That wouldn't work that well on radio. Now, all fair, we'll accept the call. We wouldn't mind that.
It would be so personal.
There you go.
I'd be flattered.
So, Nick, let's start with that. John just touched on it, so let's just get to that, and then we'll get to everything else. But so this connectivity thing, which obviously has been a hallmark of your tenure, where did it come from in your background that I think you lean into it more than most as coaches? And what is the frequency with which you reach out to the guys to try to connect in that way?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I think that any team, I think it starts with this. Any team I've ever been on, it's about team. Any good team I've ever been on, it's always been about team. And it's not the best groups of individuals that wins. It's the best teams. It's the teams that are willing to go a little bit harder because they don't want to disappoint the guy next to them. That dates all the way back to I'm shooting baskets in my driveway at my house, you know, any summer day. And I can't tell you how many times there was a former player that pulled up and said, "Yeah, I'm back in town. Is your dad home? And I just want to say hi to Coach Sirianni." And always that relationship I thought meant a ton. And then fast forward to when I was in college, I had a pretty significant injury, and it forced me to be in the hospital for about 2 weeks, a football injury. And excuse me. And the day after it happened, we were playing, or 2 days after it happened, we were playing a game, and my head coach, Larry Karras, came into the hospital room, you know, the day of the game. And I don't remember what he said. I don't remember much about that, but you know what I do remember is he sat there, talked with me and my parents for a while. He left. He said, "Hey, Nick, we're going to miss you out there today and the rest of the year." And there was something in me that said, you know, this guy really cares about me. This guy really loves me. And I don't know if I'm capable of being an All-American, but I want to be an All-American for Larry Karras because I know he cares about me. And, you know, I wasn't good enough to be an All-American. I was second team All-OAC, Ohio Athletic Conference in college. But so I didn't quite reach that feat. But I did respect the heck out of him, and I did know he cared about me, and I just knew that there was, with those couple moments and those things that you're brought up in, you know, just like anything, it shapes who you are, and it shapes what you believe in, and it shapes how you lead. And I think those are the things that are there, and then those are the things that you remember most about all the players that you've been around is the relationships. You admire the plays that they've made and but you admire more the time that you spent with them and the relationships that you have. That's going to last forever.
Yeah, that's important. You know, Nick, I heard a story years ago that when Coach Vermeil was about to coach the Rams in that Super Bowl, shortly before it, I don't know if it's an hour, 2 or 3 hours before the Super Bowl, he called his quarterback from UCLA. And he thanked him for, you know, if that quarterback doesn't do what he does in the 70s, Dick Vermeil probably doesn't become an Eagles head coach. If he doesn't, he probably doesn't coach the Rams in 1999. So that stuff matters. All right, Nick, let's talk
that's
about
awesome.
Yeah,
that's, it's I got a lot of phone calls to make and thank a lot of players that put me in this spot then today.
There you go. All right, so Nick, let's talk about Sunday. And so obviously some very notable fourth down decisions and 2-point conversion decisions. on Sunday, and you said yesterday, and this was the quote, you said, I think we did the right thing in all those scenarios. So what do you say? And I thought you did in some and not in others, full disclosure. That's what I've been saying the last 2 days. What do you say to the people who disagree with you on one, two, three, four of them? What do you say to people who think you got it wrong a couple times?
Sure, yeah. You know, I know that any time a fourth down decision doesn't doesn't succeed, you know, that's going to be a lonely place for myself. And it's also going to be a moment that, you know, I'm going to always have to, look at and say, did I go through the right process? Or was I reactionary? Well, everything that I try to teach our guys is to be process-oriented. So you're not making rash decisions during the game off your hip or whatever. And so all those decisions I made were exactly what they're Eagle football. It's what we've been doing for the last 4 years or last 3.5 years that I've been the head coach. It's been Eagle football. And it's not easy. Obviously, it's not easy because when it fails, there's going to be criticism. And when it succeeds, you know, no one's really high-fiving me, and that's okay. But you're doing everything you possibly can do to put the team in a position to win. And so those are all decisions that I'll go back. Like, and we were 11-15 on fourth down going into that game. And so, you know, what we're proud of is that we followed our process and that, you know, there was noise after the New Orleans game that, you know, we shouldn't have done something or, you know what? And we continued to play Eagle football, what we know Eagle football is. And it helped us get a lead in the Giants game on a 4th-and-3. It helped us early on in the Green Bay game on a 4th-and-3 that helped convert to drives. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those don't go your way. You're not going to be 100% on those. And I have to be able to do what I think's best for the football team at all times, regardless of public opinion, regardless of criticism. I think that's what leader, you know, you're not going to be popular as a leader at all times. It's just not going to be, it's not the reality of leadership. But leadership is doing everything you think is the right thing to do, not off gut reactions, but off of your process and the preparation that you did, right, to help your team succeed and block out every outside noise. Because if I want my team to block out outside noise when it's good, and I want my team to block out outside noise when it's bad, to just focus on the process, then I sure as heck better do it.
Nick, you talk about the players on a good team. They don't want to disappoint the guys next to them. Do you find that that affects you as a play caller? You know, do you find that you can go for it at times on offense to show the players that you trust them? To reinforce that you believe they can win in that situation?
Of course, yeah. I think that, again, you don't want to let anybody down. That's why you feel so bad when it doesn't go your way, and you feel great when it does. But I think that all comes down to back to the relationships and back to the trust. I have to trust my process of what, again, it's not any numbers that are telling me what to do. It's my trust in the players, right? On a 4th-and-3 against the New York Giants, you know, I think there was a video out that our team put out. It was like, I'm watching this video and I'm remembering what I said. Like, I circled Jalen Hurts and I circled A.J. Brown. I said, I'm going for this right here because I trust the crap out of you guys. Like, you guys have showed me time and time again, like, that you've been successful in this, and we score a touchdown there. You know, and I did, and I trusted them on 4th-and-3 in this game. It didn't go our way this time. But I think it does come down to, again, trusting your process, not being reactionary, not having any influence from any outside noise, and just trusting mm-hmm. what you do, because we spend a lot of time on that, a lot of time. And then trusting, you know, it comes down to trusting your players. We do, like, again, you're on a good team, so you trust your players. I trust A.J. Brown. I trust Devontae Smith. I trust Jalen Hurts. I trust Saquon Barkley. I trust Lane Johnson, Mekhi Becton, Cam Jurgens, Landon Dickerson, Jordan Mailata when he's back, Fred Johnson now. I trust Dallas Goedert. I mean that's been a big reason where we've been able to get leads and have the success we've had, is because we haven't kicked field goals and we've been able to go and get points. But I fully understand, guys, that when it doesn't go your way, there's going to be criticism. But again, you got to do what you think's best for the football team, and that's not blind faith, right? I think that you know, faith is, you know, we have blind faith in our faith, but then you have faith because of results and what's happened and what you see at practice every day.
Sure.
And what you've seen on Sundays for the last couple of years. And so that's where that conviction, that the process, the trust comes into play.
So, Nick, one of the late decisions, and let's talk about trust from the perspective of the defense. So you go for the 57-yard field goal. What about the trust in the defense to say, if I punt this ball with a good punter, he probably gets the ball around the 10, and I make Trevor Lawrence, and I'll say it, you won't, but a very not good offense, have to go 90 yards against my defense, which has largely dominated the game. I mean, where does that come into the equation in that moment instead of a 57-yarder, which if you miss it, and you do have a good chance to miss it, the ball's sitting right by midfield?
Yeah, I think that's even more trust in your defense to say if you do miss it, you know they're going to stop them, and we did. But I understand. I understand your question.
Sure.
I think the trust comes in Jake and the field goal unit first and foremost. 2 years ago, you know, I put myself, the things that we go through with situational game management things, you know, that's going to be a 3-hour meeting that I have today. That's meetings throughout the week. And then that's review of all those things and tapes of these things on Saturday. I put a lot of time into this and, you know, that's my job as a head coach, to make sure that we're managing the game the right way. So I take myself back and you put yourself, and again, the trust that you have in players. You know, a lot of different metrics are used to help me make these decisions. Trust, past experience, analytics, all those things. All those things help you make these decisions. But I think, again, I say again, first and foremost is the trust in the players. So 2 years ago against Green Bay, we were up 7 points. And the ball was actually back a little bit further. It was a little bit more of a windy day. We were going the other way, but we were up 7 points. I believe it was 37-30. In the fourth quarter, and we were, I'm like, okay, here we go. Let's let Jake put us up 2 scores. And he crushed it. He nailed it. It was great operation. And so, you know, it was this very similar one. Now you're not going to go up 2 scores, but you're going to go up 8. And when you're up 8, it's a different feeling than when you're up 7, because you know that, you know, it's just a little bit of a different feeling.
Sure.
Both offensively and defensively. And so that was in my mind, and you know, and that's, and I did what I thought in that time was the right thing. It didn't work. So our defense had to play defense with a little bit shorter of a field, and they did, and they did an awesome job. Nicobe made a great play. You know, it's pretty cool when you win on a walk-off touchdown. So I think that I trusted Jake in that spot. It didn't work this time, and I have no doubt that Jake's one of the most clutch kickers in the NFL. I mean, look at his track record. The last year's Buffalo game, hitting that, and that was to tie it up to go to overtime, but hitting that one from the 42-yard line in the rain and the wind and all that crap. And so, you know, again, you trust in them, and then trust in the defense that if we do miss this, you know, they've been playing pretty darn good football all game, that we can get a stop if we do.
Nick, what's going wrong with the tush push? We've grown unaccustomed to not converting in goal line and short yardage situations, and then all of a sudden we got hit with a couple non-conversions. What went wrong?
Yeah, man, that play's been so electric for – I don't want to say electric because you only gain like 2 yards, but like right. It's been
effective
so
effective is all hell.
Yeah. Effective would be the word,
effective.
Yeah.
Effective. Exactly. There you go. That's why you guys talk all day, and effective is the right word. Man, you know what? Hats off to Jacksonville. They did a really good job. And you know what, we're going back to the drawing board. We've had a lot of success there, and we got to do a couple different things coaching wise. That's going to help some things out that I still got a lot of faith in. Cause again, you don't lose faith in something just because of one day. And you know, I know we've missed a couple this year, but you know, I don't know exactly what our percentages are comparatively to last year, but I know it's still been highly productive, more so than other plays and other teams doing it, you know. And so, again, hats off to Jacksonville. They had a good plan. They did a good job. When you load the box and do something to stop it, the other things become there's other opportunities for you. And so we'll continue to press on as coaches to make sure that play is – we still got the right guys to do that play and to do everything there. And so we'll try to help these guys be in better spots. I know we'll work our fundamentals that it takes to be good there. We studied the crap out of what Jacksonville did to stop it. And have some answers to go forward from there, because we know we'll probably see it again.
Nick Sirianni here. Two final things. An all-timer by Saquon, the whole thing, the play, the game, the season, it's all an all-timer. How, though, in, like, the world can the replay booth determine that Jags defender tripping him did not contribute to him falling? I mean, I thought it was a travesty. What did you make of it? And how shocked were you when you heard the official call upon review?
I was hoping you'd ask me more about the play that he made than the one that I'm upset about. Yeah,
you can't get fined for talking about his great play, right?
Exactly. I know you guys don't care about the fine.
No, we do care, but it really. I mean, Nick, here's what I'll just say this. So there's a narrative out there that the game was close because the game was close, but I really believe a lot of people have missed. The other team being handed 7 points, like literally, here you go, other team, here's 7 points. That made the game closer than it would have been.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. I think, you know what, it's very, I'll say it this way. I'll always keep my conversations with the league private. I won't ever put those out there, just like I won't with any players or anything like that. And we're still waiting to hear back, so I don't even have that answer yet. But, I do know this, and that these things happen to level out as the year goes on. You're going to get some calls, you're going to miss some calls, and you're not going to get some calls. So it's like, this is coming from me, who gets animated about a call that doesn't go his way at times, right? And so I think I've done a better job at this of not. Not being irate at different calls. And there was a couple times that I was in the game. I felt like with the quarterback sneak on the 2-point conversion that didn't go. I mean, I really still feel like we got in because Jalen reached the ball over the goal line. But those plays, again, we're going to get a call, whether it's in the game that you're playing or a game that you're playing next week. They're all things, they even themselves out. And so I've tried not to get too crazy about anything like that, and I know, and I think you guys should, like, I'm not telling you guys not to, I think you should, but that's my perspective on it, that sometimes they go, the ball, this ball that we play with, this whatever shaped ball, this oval shaped ball that we play with, bounces different ways, and sometimes you get the bounce that you need and sometimes you don't. Like, for instance, Jake's ball hit the goalpost. Yeah. Sometimes that bounces in and you get a hit off of it. And that's the same way with calls. And they got a hard job to do. That's not my job to criticize them. My job is to coach this team the best I can possibly coach this team to help them be ready to play and win each week.
All right, Nick, final thing. And this is something we've been wondering for a few weeks. Most important thing of all, why does Big Dom have a headset on? What's going on there?
Oh, shoot. Again, we've had some headset issues. He's just there to help if any headset issues happen right there, have it back up for me there. And so, yeah, I wouldn't look too much into that.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. All right, Nick, congratulations on the 4-game winning streak, and good luck versus Dallas, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.
All right, there he is, Eagles head coach Nick Sirianni. Well,
this show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy, shipped nationwide.
Welcome back to Midday Show. Hugh Douglas, Joe Giglio, you guys with us. 215-592-9494 on a Wednesday. This hour sponsored by Popeyes. It's football season in Philly, so fly to Popeyes, fly and fill up on wings in 7 delicious flavors from Popeyes. All right, coming up in a little bit, Nick Sirianni's midweek press conference. A big what-if Wednesday as we start looking ahead to some big things that could be happening.
Dallas week.
It is Dallas week. Elliot later in the show. And Kyle, our next guest here is our buddy Seth Joyner.
And Seth is sponsored by Bet Parks Online Casino and Sportsbook. New users can score up to a $1,000 casino bonus in their first 24 hours. BetParks.com. Must be 21 in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, or Michigan. Gambling problem, 1-800-GAMBLER.
Seth, how we doing?
what's happening, Hugh? You got to let Kyle do his read first, man.
My bad, dog. You know, it's Dallas week. You know what? Like, Seth, I don't think I've ever asked you this question, but I used to hear stories about you guys in Dallas week, and I just wanted to know, what was it like for you getting ready for Dallas week?
Oh, man, it was twofold. It was like the perfect storm. Cut. Quick story. When I was coming out of college 2 weeks before the draft, Dallas actually flew me into Dallas and worked me out. Now, I was never a Cowboys fan, but, you know, when the prospect of coming to the league, you're like, I'm going to play for whoever drafted me. You know what I'm saying? So they kind of promised me that they was going to draft me, and then it never happened. Mm-hmm. Then the Eagles draft me, I come to Philly, and never really understood the hatred and the rivalry between the two teams. So my hatred for the Cowboys is on steroids compared to, you know, the average person. You know, this nonsense about the Giants rivalry is bigger than the Cowboys rivalry. Man, you fan, please.
Seth, that only happened, I think, the last maybe 15, 20 years because the Cowboys haven't been quite as good. But, Seth, I remember when I was younger, you know, towards the second half of your career, seeing some of those and then the moments. Like, that's when it felt to me like it was at its best, Seth. That rivalry, when you were playing and Buddy, those games, especially the games in Dallas, it just felt – the week felt different, the feeling felt different. And every time we get to play the Cowboys now, Seth, that he kind of brings those memories back.
Joe. I've been listening to you and Hugh for a whole year now, man. You are so off when it comes to this. Dallas is Dallas. I hate them. Beep, 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 beep. Listen, it's a big game every time. I don't care what the teams. Both teams can be 0-5 by the time they get together. In the city of Philadelphia, that's a major rivalry. That's the biggest rivalry we have, okay? My hair stands up on the back of my neck when I think about playing the Dallas Cowboys, all right? That's serious business.
Well, of course it is, and it always will be. Seth, so let's talk about this week, this game. Seth, the Cowboys are in a bad way. I mean, the Eagles get them at a time they lose their quarterback. When you think about this week, this game, this feels like a chance, Seth, for the Eagles to bury the Cowboys and get another win under their belt to 7-2.
Perfect. It is, though. You know, couldn't. What's going on with the Dallas Cowboys couldn't happen to a better organization. let me just start with that. And there have been times in the history of this rivalry when the Eagles have been on the opposite end of the circumstances and how it looks and feels right now. Mm-hmm. They didn't have no mercy and no sympathy on us. We should go in this game with no mercy or sympathy for them. I mean, go down there, totally destroy them in their house, you know, while they're down, kick them. You know, while they're down, pour your drink on them. I don't care. I don't want the Eagles to go in and dominate this game, put the foot on the gas pedal, and keep it on there until the clock says 0-0-0. If you can go down there and put 70 on them like they put on somebody last year, do it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you.
Well, I love that, and hopefully that is Sunday. Seth, part of that and getting all those points on the board will be the decision-making of the head coach when they have a chance to score points, whether it be a field goal, whether it be two-point conversions or extra points. Seth, what was your takeaway on Nick Sirianni's decisions on Sunday? They won. They got out with the victory, even though it got tight at the end. But there were a lot of moments. I mean, if you count them up, Seth, there are 9 points that Sirianni had a hand in either trying to get on the board or taking off the board. What did you make of how Sirianni coached the game on Sunday when it came to the in-game decisions?
Listen, I don't have a problem with being aggressive, but I think that we have evolved. I think, first of all, we're drunk on analytics and we're drunk on the go for it all the time. I think that if the game warrants you going for it, and when I say if the game warrants it, if you're in a shootout with a team and you know that you got to keep pace points-wise, then you go for it at every turn. If it's a game-tying, game-winning, or an opportunity for you to turn a 2-score lead into a 3-score lead, then you go for it. But this just going for it and going for 2, you know, when it really doesn't matter, what's the difference between 17 and 18 points? To me, that's just stupid. That's just pure idiocy, you know. And for Nick to double down on it and say that he didn't think that he did anything wrong, if he was in that set of circumstances, he'd do it all over again, I think that's a problem, you know. Because when you're playing a team like the Jaguars, they had 38 yards in the first half. They only had one first down the entire first half. You had an opportunity, if you take all the points all along, okay, just take the points. If you take the points, they're waiting to quit. They're waiting to lay down. That's what happens with bad teams. But when you do stupid stuff like he did in the first half, all it takes is one or two touchdowns, and boom, they're right back in the game. And now the team that was willing to lay down and die, you just gave them life. To me, that makes no sense. So if he doesn't adjust how he is going to, you know, be aggressive, then it's going to bite us in the ass down the road again. I'm telling you right now. Because there's a time and a place and a reason why you be aggressive. And there's a time and a place when you're playing the team and you know that you can put them away, that you just put them away. Them being aggressive just to be aggressive when necessary.
Seth, I agree. I mean, I think sometimes these coaches, Sirianni's not the only one, they just look at, okay, this is a situation we're supposed to go for it, instead of saying, all right, if we're playing the Lions, we're playing the Chiefs, we're playing the Ravens, well, we need to get, you know, it's the first team to 30 points or whatever, then we need to get there. You're playing the Jaguars, just keep it simple. I mean,
yeah, you should just beat them.
I mean, what Seth just said, you've said that all week, similar, the idea that the Jaguars had 30 yards at halftime. Why are we pushing the envelope?
Yeah, and I know we're a little antiquated, but to me, that is a situation where I don't feel, like you said, Seth, in the first half, they didn't have any offense. I don't feel you need to chase points in that situation. We were sitting on the sideline, and it was me and a couple other old guys that I was hanging out with, and we were just like dumbfounded. Why are they going for two? Like, it just didn't make any sense to me in that situation.
Bro, listen, let me tell you something. It ain't antiquated, because there was a point in time in the National Football League where running the football was becoming antiquated. And isn't that moving in a different direction?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. It is.
Okay. So then when you look at the successful coaches in the National Football League, Andy Reid, Sean Payton, Mike Tomlinson, they don't lose their damn mind chasing points. You know what they do? If Andy thinks that he's got to play because it's something new, it's a new wrinkle, or he feels that they can really execute it and they're at the 50-yard line, then they'll go for it. And the only time he's going to go for it is a situation where the game is close. Like, mm-hmm. He went for it on the first time they hit the 50-yard line on Monday night. Why? Because the opposing team was, you know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were close. They scored a touchdown. The game was close. So then he went for it. But every other time, they pin the opponent, you know, down, and they make them go 70, 80 yards to get points, okay? They take points when points are available. How many times you see Harris Buckner run out there and kick field goals, or the kicker for, you know, the Steelers go out? You watch Mike Tomlin. He won a game. The Steelers won a game earlier this year. They kicked 5 field goals in one game and won 15 to something, okay? So that antiquated nonsense is BS, because the real good coaches, the coaches who have had longevity in this game, they use analytics and the go for it mentality only when there's an advantage. Mm. Like I said, there was no advantage of having 17 or 18 points. That's stupidity. Now you got 16, dummy.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I mean, some of the best coaches, and like you said, the longest tenured coaches, people tend to say are conservative, whether it be Shanahan, McVay, Reid. All I know is their teams win a lot and they score a lot of points almost every single week. All right, Seth, yesterday was the NFL trade deadline. Usually, Howie Roseman does something. Almost every year he adds something. Nothing yesterday. Seth, were you surprised? Did you think the Eagles should have made a move?
I was disappointed to see pass rushers moving for 5th, 6th, and 7th rounders, and we sat pat and weren't active in that area. And I get it. You know, Nick Sirianni is going to say, you know, I like our team. Vic Fangio is going to say, yeah, I'm pleased with what we got right now. But anybody who got eyes to see and anybody who knows football, and as a coach, that's what you're supposed to say, because now you're speaking to the players that you coach. So outwardly, you can't say that. But anybody who's got eyes to see and anybody who's watching the football team knows that they need a bona fide pass rusher. Za'Darius Smith would have looked fantastic here. And Joe, I agree with you. I would have gave up them two first round draft picks if it would have got us Myles Garrett. You know, because
he didn't say Micah Parsons though. He said Myles Garrett. He didn't say Micah Parsons.
I might even gave him up for Micah Parsons.
Oh, Micah Parsons.
Now,
come
see,
on.
Seth gets it. Seth gets it.
Hey, listen, Micah Parsons, 25 years old, man. You're gonna get at least another 7-8 out of him. And guess what? You know, the culture is different in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
I would have got him up in here, get BG on him, man. You shut that damn podcast down. We here to win championships, bro. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's possible. Lane Johnson's voice is becoming louder and louder in that locker room now that Jason Kelce is gone and now that Fletcher Cox is gone, speaking up, speaking between the lines, if you can read. They need a pass rusher, man.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, and Hassan, what they had was a guy that was bona fide. You knew that he was going to get you double digits, and you knew that he was going to show up in crunch time. Josh Sweat had a great week last week, but that was last week.
Mm.
We don't get that out of Josh every single week. We can't count on that out of Josh every single week, and we don't have that one guy that strikes fear in opposing offenses in crunch time. And I think that Howie, for all the good that he's done, putting this roster together, signing Saquon, so on and so forth, that was a mistake. Him not getting an upgrade at the defensive end or the edge rusher position yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I was disappointed when 4 o'clock came and the Eagles didn't make no move in that area whatsoever.
Me too, Seth. Seth, always appreciate having on. Have a great week. Enjoy Cowboys week and hopefully a good win on Sunday. We'll chat next week. Thank you, Seth.
Have a good one, man.
You got it, fellas.
There you go. Seth Joyner there. Disappointed. See, Seth brought it today. Disappointed in Howie Roseman. And I just got to say, after hearing Seth agree with me on the Parsons thing and the pass rusher thing,
You feel empowered.
Well, I just feel like we need to update the rankings here. Defensive players on this show. I'm one, you're two. I mean, that's clear now.
This show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy, shipped nationwide.
It's the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. We are lucky enough to be joined every Thursday at 4 p.m. by, I couldn't think of the word to put between enough and the name. Anyway, joined by Mike Lombardi, VSiN Morning Show, Daily Coach, the GM Shuffle, and us Thursdays at 4. Mike, how we feeling?
We're good. We're doing good. Spike, how you doing, huh? How's Ike? You guys good?
I'm great, brother. How you been?
Great. Couldn't be better. Eagles playing good. Life is good.
So, speaking of the Eagles, trade deadline 2 days ago. Eagles don't do anything. A lot of other teams made moves to get better. Detroit did. Washington did. Do you think the Eagles missed a shot there? Would you have done something?
I don't know what they could have done, really, in reality. I mean, it's hard to make deals at the end like that. I don't think there was a lot of sellers. I think teams were, you know, there's so many bad teams in the league. You thought there would have been more sellers. I mean, think about this. There's 11 teams that have three losses or three wins or less. And, you know, most of the wins come from when they play against bad plays bad in this league. So I don't know what they could do. I think one of the things that's got to be a good telltale sign for the Eagles is defensively they have really improved. I mean, they have gotten better. Now, since he threw the football on them, but they've played the run really well over the last 4 weeks. They've turned the ball over 5 times in the last 2 games. You know, they haven't turned the ball over but 1 time in 4 games, and they've scored over, you know, since the Cleveland game, they've been scoring a ton of points. So I think they're on the right track. They just need to keep getting better.
You know, to talk about the deadline a little more, I guess just in a more general sense, do you think NFL teams overvalue draft picks? In that scenario?
Oh, yeah, of course. And what makes it even more dangerous today is the fact the NIL. The NIL impacts the draft, you know, because there was a time when I first started in the league in 1984, it was always a senior draft class. There were never any juniors allowed in. They would only be allowed in a supplemental based on something that had to happen for them to get able to pass the test of the league office. But then we started to get into junior drafts. 3-year eligible players came into the draft, which really helped 150 juniors, where redshirt sophomores were able to enter into the draft, which made the top 100 a lot better every single year. Well, now we don't have that. Now we're just going to have strictly a senior draft, which is going to make the players older, which is a good thing. Now, I'm sure still some of the top 10 picks could be juniors based on where they're going to go. But if you could stay in school and hang out at the sororities and drink beer and not be a professional, even though you are a professional, you got to stay in school because you're going to get paid for it. So I think to me that's made those draft picks in those fourth, fifth, and sixth rounds a little less valuable.
When we look at the defense, Mike, I was asking someone earlier about the LBs, Zach Bond, N'Kobe Dean, how well they're playing. The Eagles, you know, one could argue they haven't necessarily invested monetarily into that position a whole lot in years past. It's been a while since we had a pair as playing as well as these two are playing. I'm just wondering, is it too early to think about? Because N'Kobe will be eligible for an extension after this season, and Zach Bond's on a one-year deal. Just wondering, Is it too early to start thinking about, do we commit to these guys long-term?
I think one of the things the Eagles have always done a good job of is they rob Peter to pay. They don't cheat where they want to put their money. They're very clear. They're going to spend on defense alignment, and they're not going to overspend. They let two good linebackers go in 2020-22 when they won all those games and they lost McGovern, and they let those guys go because they didn't want to afford it. I think a lot of it's going to come down to price control because you got to make choices with the cap, you know, and you got to find the Zach Bond. And I think it was a great finding. He's been really good tackler. Dean's a third round pick that finally has started to come along. You know, he made the play last week, which to me was one of the worst plays in football for the Jacksonville Jaguars. 1:42 to go in the game, you know, and he's trying to throw the ball in the end zone. Are you kidding me? Why would you just run it there? Run the clock, because if you score, just say Dean didn't cover that player and it was a touchdown, you're going to lose the game to the Eagles. They got too much time.
Right.
Why were you throwing the ball in the end zone? What are we doing? But that's what happens when you have guys that don't understand clock management.
Mike, the Saquon Barkley on pace for 370-plus touches, you know, 400 if they end up playing a playoff game or two. You know, we've been talking about ways to get that number down. But the question I have is, do they need to think about it not just for this season, but understanding that essentially that's a two-year deal and the way that backs look the year after that? Is that something they should be thinking about and actively working to figure out a way to get him to get the ball a little bit less, thinking about next year as well?
Yeah, well, I think it's hard. But look, the guy that, you know, you keep saying that about, not you, but I think most of us do, is Derrick Henry. I mean, here's a back who just keeps carrying the ball time and time again, and you're saying you're going to wear him out now. You're going to wear him out. I mean, Emmitt got worn out. You know, Emmitt, never, when he had 400 carries one year, the next year he wasn't the same back. But this guy's, you know, he's really good. I mean, he's able to withstand it. I mean, think about it. You know, when you go over his career, you know, he started having 300 carries back in 2019, and it hasn't deterred him whatsoever. And he's already, you know, he's already on pace to have another 300 carry year, and he does it every single game. So I think, to me, the way that they take care of their bodies and their way the health and all that. Now Barkley has had some health concerns. I think they have to be careful. Certainly, you need a two back combination. But you know, look, do you want Barkley off the field in the fourth quarter when the game's on the line? I don't.
No,
and that's the tough part, is that it's almost like if they don't start thinking about it and committing to it early in the game, then late in the game, you're left with no choice whatsoever because you are in those situations where you need him. They're really, it's amazing because during the bye week, they committed to this kind of offense and it's working, but then you start to see I think because they didn't plan on doing this, they don't maybe have the collection of backs they may have had if they thought they'd be doing this style this year.
I think they had to think this is what it was. When they gave Barkley that contract, I think they had to say, look, we need to go back to 2022 when we went to the Super Bowl, when we scored 204 points in the second quarter and we got the lead on everybody. We were a better team. Miles Sanders averaged over 5 yards a carry, gained 1,200 yards. That's who we have to be, right? I mean, I think that's who the Eagles are with Jalen Hurts at quarterback. That doesn't mean anything negative towards Jalen Hurts because it strengthens his profile. Mm-hmm. He's a very good deep ball thrower. He can keep the ball away from the opponent by running around, making plays with his feet, and then you got this power back that comes in there where you're going to have to play 6 in the box, 7 in the box, 8 in the box. You're going to have to cover this up. See, the biggest misconception is the devaluation of running back. Yes, there is an ample supply of running backs, which devalues their overall, but it doesn't devalue what they mean to your team.
Right.
Because what we're seeing with the Eagles is the ability to control the pace of the game and control the game in the fourth quarter when you need to.
You feeling good about the squad where they're at right now, Mike? It's 6-2. Like, going forward, we start to separate the pretenders from the contenders.
There's so many pretenders in this league. I mean, you got, like I said earlier, you have over 11. There's a lot of bad football going on, a lot of bad coaching, a lot of bad general managing going on in the league. Teams that have no chance, starting this week down in Dallas. I mean, look, how do you go into the season with no running backs, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, to me, they can't run the football. Now you got Cooper Rush playing quarterback. How are they going to move the football? Zach Martin's not the same player he once was. Terrence Steele hasn't played very well. You know, and they got two really good young offensive linemen, but the line can't really respond because they've got really no chance to get behind in the game. They have no defensive tackles. Parsons may play this week, but they weren't playing good defense when Parsons was playing. I mean, it was a struggle then. So, to me, a lot of the problems with these NFL teams have been the design in the offseason, really trying to evaluate your own team. And I think the Eagles have done a good job. I think Detroit's is the best team in the NFC right now. It's going to take everything the Eagles have to beat them if they play. I think Detroit's focused, and they're hard to play because they can control the line of scrimmage. But the Eagles, because of their defensive front, they match up to Detroit.
Mike, if you had to put your money, if I were to give you four teams and you were to put your money on one of them in the NFC, and I were to give you Minnesota, Green Bay, the Rams, and the Eagles, who would you put your money on?
I put my money on the Eagles on that, of those four. I think those four. Now, look, I think if you get a track meet with Green Bay and your defensive line gets tired, they're going to beat you. Mm-hmm. They're going to beat you. I think that would be the next team I would pick. I think if Green Bay and Philly played five times, I think it'd probably go 3-2 Philly. I think Green Bay's a tough team. But I think Detroit is superior to all of them. I think Detroit can control the game. Maybe, you know, Za'Darius Smith gives them that uplift in terms of a pass rusher, which they're going to need. But they can control the game. Look, Goff hasn't thrown the ball more than 25 times since the 55 passing outing he had against Tampa in week two. They're really good. They make explosive plays, and they push you around. Why? Because their offensive line. Look, follow the line. The offensive lines will tell you. It's like tonight. You know, Cincinnati passed on Sewell. They took Chase. Chase is a great player. But what's Cincinnati's biggest problem? They have no physicality with their team.
Yeah. I remember that draft, too, because me being from Cincinnati and being a Bengals fan as well, I'm like, you got to get some protection for Joe Burrow. But I do understand how great of a player Ja'Marr Chase is. But it doesn't matter, like you said, if you don't have a protection up front, man, like that's what matters most.
They can't run the ball at all. I mean, They can't control the game. See what? Look, I'm a big believer. I agree with the Eagles' philosophy. You got to throw the ball to win. But you have to run the ball to control the game. You have to have some balance. Like Peterson not running the ball on 1st and 10 from his 13 and trying to throw the ball in the end zone with 1:42 to go might be one of the worst calls in football. And, of course, it's going to be on Trevor Lawrence for throwing the interception. But from a strategic standpoint, from somebody who understands the essence of game management, of how to win the game, that was a bad call. But he doesn't have any faith in the run game. He doesn't want to run the ball. He's from that part of which doesn't understand it. I just want to call pass plays. It's like when Eric Bieniemy was so proud of himself for calling 60 passes last year in a game, even though his quarterback got killed. He said, well, Andy Reid would have been proud of me. No, he wouldn't. Andy Reid's run the ball as much as anybody right now.
That's for sure.
That is for sure. Mike Lombardi with us, as he is every Thursday at 4. Last one, Mike. The Eagles had, from the first time in a game, really seemed like they were challenged on the tush push. It did not seem as effective. We had Sheil Kapadia on, who said that he noticed that Jacksonville was sort of lining their linebackers up behind the defensive line and almost reverse tush pushing it. Are you surprised that it has taken the rest of the NFL this long to come up with a specific strategy to combat that it seems to have taken?
No, I'm not surprised. I mean, look, I think they missed Kelsey in there. I think if Kelsey were still playing, it would still be a harder strategy. But and you know, let's give Kurtz a lot of credit, too. The guy squats how much? You know, it's ridiculous. His lower body strength. And his ability to move, you know. I mean, everybody's had a try of a way to stop it. It's, do you have enough power? Do you have power to handle it? You know, Jacksonville doesn't have any power inside a tackle. I mean, one of Jacksonville's problems on defense is they got two edges, but they have no power inside. You know, the game of football has to be controlled inside out. You've got to have those. That's why drafting a three technique, they get Jalen Carter. I mean, to get a three technique at the ninth pick overall on the draft who can dominate a game is a rare commodity.
All right, Mike. We appreciate it, man.
Yes, sir.
Thanks, guys.
All right, brother.
Always the best.
All right, brother.
Thanks, Mike.
Jason, what's it like to play in Big D? That's where the Birds will be this weekend. You got a Jumbotron that's 70,000 times bigger than you.
Yeah.
You got about 100,000 people in there. Yeah. What is that whole, it looks like a spaceship. Like, what is that thing?
It is a very weird venue to play a football game in. I think, and we, like, I know that everybody's high on the Eagles this week, and so am I. Like, I think that they should go down there and win. We have struggled there. I mean, we haven't won since 2017, I think was the last time we won in Dallas, maybe.
That's when Jay Ajayi got tracked down from behind because that guy was faster than him.
And maybe that's not accurate, but it's been a while since we've won in Dallas.
You know, their old stadium, the one before this one, I found it difficult to catch a ball in that one.
Yeah.
Just based on the back, you know, some of them, the backdrops are weird. Like the way the seats go together.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why Tommy Hutton dropped the ball. John, you might not remember this, but 25 years ago was one of the most crushing losses ever. Field goal to win the game. Tommy Hutton drops, as the holder, drops the ball.
Yeah, that's not
And good. That was the end of the game.
I never slept that night.
Listen, it was week three of 96. Yeah. It was week three of 97. I still haven't gotten over that game.
And he shouldn't be dropping that based on the seats in the draft.
That's not one of the
balls. Yeah, he can't use that as an excuse.
I just wanted to rip Tommy
too low.
One more thing on that, I guess the Dallas stadium. It's the reason it's weird is it doesn't feel like you're at a football game. It feels like you're at an entertainment event. It feels more
really.
Yeah, it feels very.
It's so slick.
It's the way it's kind of laid out and. There's a lot of people there, but also doesn't feel like there's that many people there. It just feels more like an entertainment thing. There's I don't know if they're still there, but there were dancers in this one section up on poles. And I was like, is that okay?
Really?
There's dancers on poles? I don't know if they're still there. Maybe it was a platform that was just being held up by poles.
Was this just a special event?
It might have
been. John, it's the Dallas Cowboys, man.
There's dancers on poles?
They're a circus.
It might have been a platform. It was in that section where they have the, I don't know what car manufacturer it is, but there's some club on one of the end zones. I remember what is, I still remember going there for the first time, seeing that huge Jumbotron. It feels like we're more entertainment now than you go to Green Bay and it's oh no, this is
your early days, Jason, here. So you were here 2011, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have a memory of the first time you realized how big the Eagles Cowboys thing is? Is there a moment where it clicked and it's holy mackerel, this is big?
Well, the first time you play it, play against them, all the older guys are telling you right away. Right?
And who were they for you?
Jason Peters was a big one. And I think part of it for him was that he was also from or lived in Texas in the offseason.
Gotcha.
And so he knew some of the guys and he, definitely took that rivalry personal. And I think that he was a guy that definitely kind of explained that full
That's go. Cool. Sure. That's cool to think about because I didn't think about the fact that Jason Peters was local. How that would
Trot grew up there.
I played with Trot.
He was celebrating when they won those three Super Bowls, and I still rip him for that.
Yeah.
And I guess Brent Celek and Trent Cole and those guys had been around by the time.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, that's part of the thing when you're a young player. The older players, and hopefully all of the, and not hopefully, but Lane and all the guys that have been a part of this, there's some young players on the Eagles now, and those guys need to know. The Cowboys have been underperforming, and we are really doing a lot better.
Yeah.
But in-division games, it is not, we got to show up to play. We're going to see a different Dallas Cowboys team than these other teams have seen. This is, a huge game, not just for their team, but their fan base. There's going to be a lot more energy, and, we got
to
be ready.
Sure. All right, let's get back to the phones. Let's talk to Amy calling from Ardmore right now. Good morning, Amy.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
What's up, Amy?
I just wanted to call in, and look, I'm not trying to belabor the point or anything, but as a Penn Stater, I was so disgusted with that kid, if he was a kid, I don't even know, but...
Yeah, young adult would probably be the... Who was acting like a child.
Acting like a child, and look, I've taught high school for 20 years, and this gets back to Chris Long's point, I'm not saying that you know, everybody needs to be punched in the face to grow up. But a metaphorical punch in the face would be good for,
yeah,
for that kid. And look, yeah, Kels, we love you, and we know who you are, like everybody's been saying. And, you know, I just want to apologize on and hope that didn't spoil your, I'm sure it probably did, but your whole first experience with the Happy Valley tailgate. I mean, that was just, it was so gross. And that kid is clearly somebody who has never been held accountable his whole life. So, you know, good for you is how I felt about it. And the word's the word, and you've apologized, and we know who you are. So we love you.
Amy, thank you. I will say it did not, you know, Happy Valley was fantastic. I don't want to, like,
okay,
it really stinks that that kind of takes the highlight. I mean, I was there,
yeah,
for a charitable component with Pat McAfee and some of the things he's doing right now,
right,
for hurricane relief, which was spectacular. But
yeah,
one of the reasons I was out there walking around is because I wanted to experience some of the tailgating stuff and, you know, got to meet a lot of Penn State fans. And that place is more happy than I think what was on display. It was a lot of fun. It was great. I know the game didn't work out their way, but there was so many wonderful people and truly fun personalities that I engaged with throughout the day. So, I appreciate you.
Hey,
Hey,
Amy, you can win the tickets for Saturday night's fight, championship bout at the Wells Fargo Center with Boots Ennis. Give me an answer. Who's a living role model?
I'm going to go with one of my all-time favorite Eagles and say Brian Dawkins.
Brian Dawkins has been said. You got to pivot to someone else.
No. Oh, shoot. You know what? Then, because I got her on the brain, I'm going to go with the person who uses her talent and her voice and spreads joy and
Tay-Tay? We going Tay-Tay here?
We're going Tay-Tay.
Yeah. All right. You got it, Amy.
Playing to the crowd. I like
Jason's vote.
Yeah, I like that answer.
All right, Amy. Great, great phone call.
Right now.
There you go. Amy, really, really good call.
It's the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. Every Wednesday at 4, we are lucky enough to be joined by one Brian Baldinger, our Odyssey Sports NFL Insider. Insider Call is brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store. Baldy, how we doing?
Life is good. Life is good, man. Good to be with you guys.
Good to have you with us.
Hello, Baldy.
You know, we were talking yesterday. We looked at Saquon Barkley had 30 touches on Sunday. He was great.
Yep, he sure did. Yep.
And he is on pace for 370-something touches, which would be the most in his career. More than Christian McCaffrey, 339 last year. If you were running the Eagles right now, would you have any concern about his durability to the end of the year and look to maybe find a way to get that number down a little bit?
Absolutely, I would. Yes, because even last year, McCaffrey, if you count the postseason, he had over 400 touches.
Mm-hmm.
And I said throughout the season last year, like, he's not built. Nobody's built. I mean, LaDainian Tomlinson was built to handle 400 touches, the only guy that could do it multiple years in a row. Emmitt was built for it. But I don't know if anybody's built for it anymore. The guys are just so much bigger, stronger, faster that they're being hit. I would be concerned. And going forward, I'd be concerned. I mean, look what McCaffrey's doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a product of what he endured last year, as good as he was. You know, this is a product of when guys approach 400 touches in a season, the year after, and you can track it. I've done it. Deuce McAllister, Sean Alexander. You can go through the history of guys that touched it 400 times in a season. Curtis Martin, they fall off a cliff the next year. And so, yes, I would be concerned about that.
So follow up to that. All right, you're concerned about it. So would your, and I know I'm dumbing this down a little bit in terms of how you address it. Would the way that you address it be, hey, we've got a decent backup in Kenny Gainwell, we got Will Shipley there. Is the answer to just run the sort of the same thing that you're doing and use those guys? Or is the answer for Jalen to be throwing the ball more than he is?
Well, what's working right now is working. I mean, Gainwell probably needs more touches. He's a good back. They use him, you know, in a very specific role right now, kind of a rotational third down type guy. You know, he's good like that. He's good in short yards or goal line. That was his role in the postseason for a number of years. But, you know, the problem right now is that they're in these dogfights with these bad teams, you know, like Cleveland and New Orleans and Jacksonville, and they're in these dogfights with these teams, and they shouldn't be, but they are. And some of it is coaching decisions. Some of it is just, you know, they play down to these teams' level, and so they need Saquon to go, you know, pull some of these plays out of his hat like he did, you know, against New Orleans to help win that game.
Yeah.
So they're not really in a comfortable position where they could take their best player off the field.
Yeah, that's what I'd said, Baldy. I'm like, they probably came into the season thinking they want to sort of monitor his touches and limit his touches, and they've gotten to a point where they actually have to rely on him as much as they do to win football games. So they're sort of stuck between a rock and a hard place, because obviously your objective is to go out and win games, and you got to do that. What did you think about Sunday's game, Baldy? Just the way, you know, Nick sort of managed the game throughout the game. Just your thoughts on that. They won the game, and so we all will take the W. I'm just wondering what your thoughts were on how Nick sort of handled the game throughout with the two-point conversions and the fourth down attempts.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this has been going on now, Ike. I mean, you could look at the New Orleans game.
Yeah.
You could look at the Cleveland game. I mean, this decision now, they're an analytics-driven team. I get it. I'm not that big into it. I don't like to have my analysts tell me what to do on Wednesday. I like the game to dictate what it is. But, like, the one – look, it's 16-0, Ike, and they go for two. Like, what's the point? It's 17, you're still up 3 points. I know they're at the one. Just kick the extra point. It's a three, it's a three-score game.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, we got a great field goal kicker. They've extended him. He's proven his worth. You got points on the board in the first half, take the points. Like, I just don't think Jacksonville hasn't shown any ability to have great firepower early in that game. I don't know. I'd take the points when they're there. There's times to go for two. You know, maybe Tampa at the end of that game against Kansas City goes for two, tries to win it right there. There's opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think every single fourth down, every single extra point has to be a two-point conversion. I just think sometimes – just take the points that are there.
One of the things that we saw on Sunday that we haven't seen very much is the tush push looking ineffective. Is that we're trying to figure out whether there's something Jacksonville did, maybe they're using it too much. What are your thoughts on that play in general and the way that they're using that play?
So I asked Jeff Stoutland about the play last year when they were, you know, in the middle of having great success with it, or the year before, I forget. And he reminded me that when Carson was here, they were 36-38 on quarterback sneaks. And so he just looked at me, because this is how Stout is. He goes, "Do you see a common denominator?" I go, "Yeah, Kelsey." He goes, and he just walked away. So, like, they don't have Kelsey. Mm. And there's nothing against Cam Jurgens. Not everybody. I mean, Kelsey had enormous leg strength. He still could probably squat 700 pounds, even losing all the weight he's lost.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Cam just isn't built like that to get, and you can see it on film. Like, he's not getting as low to start the push as Kelsey did and still be able to get that snap up. That's what he always worried about, is getting so low and still get the snap at the same. It's kind of hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just see a couple times where Cam looks like he's a little high and, you know, they're not getting the same push at the point right now. And that's why they're trying some of these offshoots of it, where they're going out wide or they're going to try and pitch it, and some of these, like, the deceptives off of that play, and they haven't worked either. So, I don't know. Like, if you have Mekhi Becton and Landon Dickerson, can you just line up in I formation and just go knock somebody off the ball?
Mm.
They're about the two most powerful guards in the league. Mm. Maybe you don't have to rely on that anymore.
And you got a 225, 30-pound running back. You can give it to him for 1 yard.
Right? You know, I mean, I kind of, like, the way they're moving bodies up front, like, just do it the old-fashioned way, you know, like, get you either quarterback sneak it, like, with a surprise, or hand it off to Saquon, let him, you know, give you a 8 yards head start, and let Mekhi go do what he's been doing.
I actually wonder if the effectiveness of that going down will change their thoughts on the amount of times they go for two.
I think it should.
Yeah,
it's a good question. But I mean, if I was them, and I see the lack of success that they've had the last 3 years with it right now, I would be looking at altering ways to gain your yard, whether it's short yardage, goal line, whatever the situation might be.
Brian Baldinger with us, as he is every Wednesday at 4 o'clock. So every time A.J. Brown is off the field, and this is not a slight on Devontae Smith at all, but the Eagles' offense looks disjointed. It is not the same thing. Have you ever seen a team as dependent on their number one wide receiver, a good team, as the Eagles are right now, it seems like, with A.J. Brown?
I mean, if you took Ja'Marr Chase off the field in Cincinnati, I don't think Joe Burrow's throwing 5 touchdown passes like he has, you know, two times this year.
Right.
I mean, there's a couple of guys, but I'm just going through the list of guys right now. I mean, it seems like everybody, you can overcome the loss of Puka like they did. You know, you can overcome DK Metcalf in Seattle like they have and still play good football, but probably not to the degree that AJ, just because of the trust that Jalen has in him for big plays or when you're going to need to make a play. I mean, it seems like that's where the ball is always going. I mean, even with as much time as he's missed this year, I think he's still their leading receiver this year.
AJ, you mean? Yes.
Yeah. I think he still leads him in receptions.
Yep. So defensively, Baldy, the Eagles have been so much better than I think we could have ever hoped for, especially after the bye. They did have a couple of good games before the bye, the Saints game specifically. But I think we were hoping for a defense that is passable, and they've looked like a defense that is legitimately good. Is there anything you see when you watch them that leads you to believe that this sort of play isn't sustainable, or is this just sort of what we have with a defense with the Eagles right now?
Well, I mean, it's been 4 years at least since they've had the stability at linebacker like they have right now. I mean, Zach and N'Kobe are playing legit good football, off the ball. They don't come off the field. They used to have a dime package when Matt and Chauncey Gardner-Johnson was here the first time. Like, they legitimately are playing those two backers the whole game. And they've been really good. Obviously, N'Kobe with the interception at the end. I'm not sure why Trevor threw that, but he did. And N'Kobe was right there to make the play. I mean, it's a first down throw. I don't think you have to make that throw. But regardless, they're playing really, really solid. They are getting home with 4 without a lot of blitzing right now. Cooper DeJean is making a huge difference. You know, the slot right now, he's made 2 big stops on 4th downs 2 weeks in a row. Mm-hmm. And he's a great tackler. So there's certain things that look a lot better. Because last year, obviously, the tackling was atrocious. The linebacking play was atrocious. And so, you know, they gave up 35 touchdown passes. Like, you know, when you look at, what the rookie's doing out there in the corner, I mean, the ball's not going over that kid's head. Like, they didn't even challenge him the other day. I thought at least Brian Thomas Jr. would line up and they'd go after him. They didn't even challenge him.
Yeah,
and
I think they threw at him one time.
I mean, so, that's what they think, he's just that good. But I would have challenged him a little bit. Mm-hmm. But he's been really good. He's not getting beat right now. He's what they were hoping he would be.
We look at this Dallas team coming up, right? You know, we got Washington on Thursday night. I was making the case, you know, before our show today about Cooper Rush and the fact he's 5-1 in 6 of his starts. They have some confidence in him as a football team. This is one of those games we can't necessarily overlook, right?
I wouldn't overlook it. Mike is coming back. He's a difference maker. There's nobody else in the league like him. His legs are going to be fresh. He's a game changer. But the one thing, when I watch Cooper, is they really game plan for him. Mm-hmm. They really protect differently than they do if Dak is in there. Like, and with Dak, they want to get 5 receivers out. They trust his ability to read progressions and get the ball out. With Cooper, it's more, I'm not saying it's just only max protection, but there's different types of protections for him. There's more half-field reads for him. And I'm not saying they simplify it either, but it looks a lot different schematically when he plays quarterback, and one of the reasons why they've had real success with him.
That's an interesting point.
And he had a running game, too, in a lot of those, in a lot of those games.
He could take off with it. He's more than capable to do that.
So, last one, Baldy. Eagles, for real, threat to win the NFC if you had to make a guess right now?
Well, I like to see the Commanders. The Commanders play, you know, they got a tough game this weekend with Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd like to see how they hold up against that team. And let's just see what the Eagles do. I mean, if they're in a collision course here and somehow Washington beats Pittsburgh to get to 8-2, that game in Philadelphia in 2 weeks is for first place. So they could take first place from them. They're going to take care of business in Dallas. I wouldn't overlook the Cowboys. I think you'll get their best effort, whatever that is. They look like a very incomplete team to me, but I wouldn't take them lightly. They're still they know, you know, what color jersey the Eagles are. I'm sure they're going to get their best. But Washington is really good. You can't get that quarterback to make a mistake. Like, Jaden is unreal. I can't remember. I mean, as good as C.J. Stroud was last year, like, this kid doesn't make a mistake with the football. His decision-making is unbelievable. They played without their top running back, Brian Robinson, last week. You didn't even know the difference. And so that will be an old-fashioned NFC East showdown right there. I hope both teams can win this week, and it's for first place next week in Philly.
Oh, that'll be exciting. All right, Baldy, as always, we appreciate your time, brother.
Thanks, bro. Yeah,
my pleasure. Talk to you.
That is Brian Baldinger, Odyssey NFL Insider, host of the Best Football Show podcast. Insider Call is brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise.
This show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy. Shipped nationwide.